Rollins has won it. They stream out of the dugout. Yeah. Rollins by near third. This game is over.
A complete game. What a performance by Cliff Lee.
Victorino in the alley calling. He's got it. And the Phillies are going back to the World Series.
Welcome to Continued Success this week with me, Justin Clue, the head guy at the Good Fight, and not with Liz Rocher, who's preparing for her nuptials this weekend in the Philadelphia area. So in her stead, we have banned Twitter personality for being too cool for school, Chris Jones, joining to talk about current Phillies and Phillies of the past 10 years ago in 2009. Hello, Chris.
Hi, I'm alive.
What's up, man? I think we all just assumed you were sitting in a dark room looking into space.
Yeah.
Unable to partake in the culture of the Phillies Twitter community, which, you know, I got to tell you, is fumbling without you.
It's got to be great. It's got to be great. I'm sure with everything that's going on right now that Twitter is not at all a hot mess.
No reaction whatsoever to the Phillies becoming more like the 2009 Phillies every day.
It's great.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Did you see just last night they had the most 2009 game? Well, I guess the 2009 alumni weekend game was probably the most 2009 game they've had this season. But last night, I mean, I called it it felt like the fourth movie of a beloved trilogy, just because they had Charlie Manuel playing a key role. They had Cole Hamels show up, but just for one movie. They had a Chris Wheeler cameo, sans wig. And
right.
You know, we had the Aaron Nola dueling Cole Hamels in like a past meets future kind of moment, and Bryce Harper double taps the Giants. I mean, I felt like that was the case, because it was like, this is like essentially a lost cause, but and you know, Charlie Manuel coming in, kind of a money grab, I feel like, for the Phillies. But I don't know, what did you make of that game? Was it as good as the vibes kind of made it feel like?
I mean, it was the first game where I was like, okay, I need to sit down and watch this start to finish. And you're kind of right. It's kind of like how they're coming out with that new Top Gun movie. Mm-hmm, and I'm like, ugh. But also I'm going to go see it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Like, ugh, shit. All right. I guess they got me back. I feel like it's a very Flyers move, and I don't even really watch hockey. but the vibe I always got from Flyers Twitter is like, this seems like something the Flyers would do. And, you know, it worked. You know, like, the Eagles are about to start up again. And you got to kind of drum up some interest, because this team is just this team is way worse than last year for me. You know, they actually had expectations this year. So really a gut punch. So, you know, like the Charlie chant, it kind of got me through my day today. Harper handing Charlie the cup of water, all that stuff. I loved it. It's wearing off right now, as we have two outs in the bottom of the eighth and it's 5-0. But, you know,
well, think about us watching a sport that they play every night of the week, is that you don't get that week-long high of an Eagles victory. You gotta just come out the next day and hope that they give you another hit. But this Phillies team is not the team you can rely on for that. But I totally agree with you, because I feel like there was a lot of talk when it was announced Charlie Manuel was going to take over as the hitting coach. It was like, oh, this is a move, we gotta think about how he's gonna affect the hitters, blah blah blah, blah. And I wanted to be like, guys, just stop.
Yeah.
This is a move that some people are calling fan service. I don't know if it's exclusively fan service, because from what we heard, John Middleton was freaking out a little bit, and he may have been pulling some of the strings to make a move like this. Whereas, you know, I don't know if you watched that press conference, but Matt Klentak and Gabe Kapler didn't look super comfortable about talking about the situation. So Charlie Manuel coming back, even if it was exclusively fan service, great. Give me some, pander to me.
Exactly.
I will give you my money to go down and
give me something.
Yeah.
Give me a reason to watch.
Seeing Charlie Manuel in a Phillies uniform on the field, like, I watching him walk out onto the field after the game, and that was like the longest stretch of footage I saw of him. I was like, oh, okay, shit. That's hitting me.
It does hit home. And, you know, like they said, there, you know, it's only like, what, 44, 45 games left when they hired him, and they were going to hire internally. It made sense. He was a hitting coach. So I think it all kind of lined up where Middleton as a businessman may have been like, all right, I'm going to have to kind of force this upon them. Because I think Klentak and company, yeah, like you said, they looked uncomfortable. I'm not sure they're totally 100% on board with it, but...
Do you feel like Charlie Manuel is intended to be the hitting coach in 2020?
I don't.
Me neither.
I don't. I think Gabe will be back for his last year, and they'll ride it out. And, you know, I mean, they're only like 2 games out right now. Like, something crazy could happen. I don't feel good about it, but it's not even that crazy. I mean, 2007, that's crazy. We, you know, if we can string some wins together, more than two or, you know, four. I don't know if you've seen the longest win streaks of the National League East this year. it's embarrassing. It's like the Braves are at like 9, the Mets are at like 11 or some shit. Everybody, the Marlins even have 7. Our highest is 4. 4 is our highest win streak of the year.
Yeah, I think a bunch of us all looked that up on the same day at one point because everyone was saying like, oh, this team is one hot streak away from being back in it. And it was like, okay, cool. I don't seem to remember a hot streak, so I'm just going to go ahead and check the numbers on this to see if this team is even capable of that. Mm-hmm. Oh, look, nope, turns out they're not.
They're not. Opening weekend was just, that was, opening weekend was the epitome of the season other than Charlie's first game. It all, you know, like I said to a couple of my friends, I was like, they're probably just going to come out and like score 10 plus tonight. just because that would be poetic. And they did. And it was fun. It was fun again for a little bit. And now it's not again.
And you know what else? Oh, well, to your point, somebody on our staff, Smarty Jones, said, you know, that means next, like tomorrow night, the offense will be not a factor in the game. And I totally, we've seen that happen so many times. And here we are.
Yeah.
You know, Phillies finally look like they're mounting a rally, and Rhys Hoskins gets thrown out of the play trying to score from second. Like
again, poetic.
Yeah.
I was just like, really? He's definitely going to get thrown out, but yeah, send him. Why not?
But an added component to the isn't this just like old times thing that sort of came together on Wednesday night. Logan Morrison was with the Phillies. I was like, oh my God, that's right. The whole Logan Morrison.
And then a base hit and like 15 seconds later picked off first. I was like, that definitely tracks with this season. It totally tracks.
Mm-hmm.
We did. I got excited for a second. I was like, remember when he was fun on Twitter? I think that was 2009 probably.
And we were all like, Logan Morrison is a dream acquisition for the Phillies. Jason Worth was leaving. We need to acquire Logan Morrison immediately.
Oh my God. What a cursed timeline.
Just kidding. Ben Francisco will be fine.
Ben Francisco. Chan Ho Park. Like that was like one of the first names that popped in my head for 2009.
Did he come back for the alumni ceremony?
Oh, I wish. He probably had diarrhea again. He probably had diarrhea. That was his excuse. I can't make it, guys. Sorry. What a great post-game interview.
Seriously. Like,
I had diarrhea. And they're like, what? Diarrhea.
Are we hearing this in the booth? Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Ask him more about the diarrhea.
Yeah, we want to hear more about his bowel movements, please.
I mean, we know they all had swine flu at this point. So
right? Yeah. Just, oh, God. And that was Vicente Padilla, right? I think he was like the catalyst for the swine flu. I remember this because I remember photoshopping his head over a big pile of pigs in a pen for the fightins. And I was like, what am I doing? Like, that was like the first time I was like, I need to sit back and be like, what am I doing with my life?
But not the last time.
No, that happens daily. But, that was one of the first times I remember, I guess.
Oh man. Yeah. So it's been a kind of a surreal, 24 hours, maybe 48 hours. Just Charlie coming back. And then just like, I don't know if they planned last night just because they knew Charlie was going to be in the ballpark. And you know, obviously with the team for the rest of the season, and they just kind of like, they decide. I didn't hear anything about them broadcasting from behind the Phillies dugout on the TV broadcast until like it was happening.
Not a peep.
Wheeler was going to be in the building. Like, I don't know. Maybe that all just came together because they were like, Middleton was like, we're going to do this.
Let's go all in.
Yeah. Let's play it up. Let's acquire. I would love it if he acquired Logan Morrison just for that reason.
Just bring it all together. Bring it all back.
This is like, you know, Drew Smiley starting for the Phillies tonight and all these other guys that are barely guys who the Phillies acquired. They cost the Phillies nothing, which is like the main, which what people who think these were like, okay, moves. They're like, oh, look, at the end of the day, it cost the Phillies basically nothing. And that's true. But, you know, you're also getting basically nothing.
Yeah.
Getting Charlie Manuel in there is like the Phillies' biggest midseason acquisition.
It's not even a debate. Yeah.
Yeah. And it cost them nothing. So it's like, I think it's a sneaky, really intelligent move from a marketing standpoint for them to do. Because, it doesn't really change anything
right when
it
football is starting.
Uh-huh.
That's also huge because
they controlled the news cycle for a minute.
Yeah. And Yeah, it was like, I remember it was the first time I turned on sports radio in a while because I hate myself. So I turned it on and I was like, wow, they're actually, I was like, they're probably talking about the Phillies, and they were. And I was like, holy shit. You know, there's very important football preseason games to look forward to. So, you know, you got to talk about that constantly.
Extremely important.
Yeah, very important, you know, where your starting QB doesn't get a single snap. But yeah, it's just, I get it. I get why they did it. I was happy they did it. But also I was like, it's come to this. This season has come to this moment where this is the most excited I've been since, I don't know, a while. It's just everything, all the storylines, like Harper, big one. I mean, he's, you know, having a couple multi-home run games the past week. But it's just been a deflating season, to be honest.
Yeah. And like, it's been, I've seen so many people be like, look, all right, no matter what happens with the Phillies, I would love to just, I will settle to just see Bryce Harper catch absolute fire, like starting tonight and for the rest of the season. And I've seen people start saying that 4 or 5 weeks ago at this point. And we're just kind of running out of rest of the season for that to be a satisfying conclusion in any way.
Second I heard there was like 45 games left, I was like, shit.
Like, I was like, they're out of time. But simultaneously, I was like, seriously, there's still 45 of these games left?
Yeah, like, and August is just grueling. August is like all just Mets, Braves, Marlins. And I think there's like one out of division series, tops. Maybe not even, but it's pretty much, you know, Mets, Braves, and Marlins. So that's either going to be awesome or heartbreaking.
Are they out of AL Central teams to play?
As if, I don't even know if that's a good thing.
I was going to say, as if that's even like a moment of success for them.
Ugh, God, I remember I went to, I think it was like the third game I went to this year. It was against the White Sox where they got one hit. And I think it was Franco. And you're like, oh, look at him go. Like, it was one hit and we lost like 2 or 3 to nothing, and it was raining and it was cold and it was gross, and I was like, I'm just gonna go get like a Federal Donuts chicken sandwich and just shove it in my face because I'm miserable. So it's just like, yeah, I don't know, like, when this season's over, obviously it's not over yet, so I don't know how I'm gonna look back on it, but if it ended today, I would look back on it with like complete and utter disdain.
We're going to remember this season. That's I think the difference is that this blur of seasons since like 2012 to 2000 last year, I guess, we're going to remember this season because it's the season they got Bryce Harper. It's the season they got Real Muto. Mm-hmm. Like, this, you're right. This is worse than last year because expectations were higher, and you know what? Rightfully so.
Yeah.
Like, expectations should have been and were sky high, and they have not reached those expectations. Even if they go and fall ass backwards into the wild card game, which I kind of don't want to happen, because then Andy McPhail will say, well, this is a playoff team.
Like, fastest turnaround in history.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, shut up.
At the moment, by the way, they have a 0.2% chance to win the World Series. So they still got that.
Well, what do we win? We get to play the Nationals at their park against probably Scherzer. hope for the best. Imagine you win. Dream scenario. You win that game. Then you get to face the Dodgers for 3 games, 2 of them at Dodgers Park. It's not happening. Like,
right.
Get swept.
It's not like I'm like, they've talked about when Jason Wirth was like, oh, well, GMs aren't Jason Wirth. Jason Stark was like, these GMs aren't planning for, you know, they might be punting on the season because they're looking ahead and facing exactly the scenario you just described and thinking like, oh shit, we don't have a chance anyway. Like, anytime the Phillies play, I want them to win. But this team is unable to win that scenario. Like you said, the wild card game, they have a chance because it's just one game.
Exactly.
A series against the Dodgers, this team doesn't have a chance. I want them to have a chance. I want to believe that they'll have a chance, but they've done nothing to make me think that they deserve one.
And they'll also probably get embarrassed. That's the worst part. Like, I don't think it would be competitive. Like, the 4-game home series we had against them, which was, you know, split 2-2, it was competitive as back. Well, I mean, some games were. The games we won were competitive. The games we lost were not competitive at all, which goes to show you that, you know, we had to scrape out some wins. Mm-hmm. It's just, and that's all at home. You know, we got swept at Dodgers Stadium earlier over 3 games, and I would expect the same. Yeah. And not only that, but now they got added fire from Neris just deciding to just turn and look at the dugout and yell, fuck you.
Love it.
Like, I was just why? Like, yeah, like, why, dude? Like, you're going to get torn apart. And then I got Russell Martin, who's like one of my most hated baseball players. I hated him from his Dodgers tenure. He made like this crazy loop around back to the Dodgers, and now I got him telling Neris to meet him in the tunnel. And I'm just like, you know what? This season can't get worse. We just won, and I'm miserable. This makes no sense.
Yeah, like why is that? Why can't we just enjoy a win? Like we talked about it on Hitting Season this week about how like do you even enjoy? Can you enjoy something in a vacuum anymore? Just like a nice play by Bryce Harper or the Phillies won a good game, and it's like no, we can't anymore because you're just thinking about what every win means, what every loss means, and honestly, it kind of feels like every win doesn't do anything for them. Every loss, they sink back like five games. I don't know how. I know that math is impossible. No, but it's exactly what it feels like.
It's for real. We just won two games in a row, and I don't check the standings anymore because that's self-care. And they put them up on the broadcast, and I saw we're three behind the Nationals, and I didn't look at the Mets. It's just my brain is just it's programmed to just not see the Mets in any way. But I saw we were three back from the Nationals after we just won two in a row, and I'm like, what's going on? We gain no ground, and we lose all the ground when we lose. It's insane. Like tonight, we're probably going to be like six out of the wild card for some reason. Seven games, like 14 teams leap us. The Marlins are ahead of us somehow. It's fine.
I don't know what happened. I used to know basic math. Now I can't even do the simple stuff, and I got to have it explained to me.
Yeah, it's gone.
Yeah, it's just out of my head.
It's gone.
Well, something else we learned last night, another narrative as part of the 2019 Phillies season. How soon before on a live television broadcast will it be before John Kruk stands up, rips the Phillies?
I knew this was going to be about Kruk. I was as you were like saying the question, I was picturing Kruk in the headdress, like just picturing him sitting there miserable. Like he's been like the only highlight because Kruk is me. Everybody's having fun and just, you know, like it was a good time last night. I get it. But like Kruk is like internal me, like just the existential dread sets in where you're like, you know, this is temporary. And like all like Kruk has the cushiest job on the planet. Let me just show up to the stadium. He rarely goes on road trips, goes to the stadium, orders a bunch of barbecue food, gets it delivered to him in trays, personalized, kisses Bull on the cheek, and then just talks about baseball miserably for the most part.
Oh, he does not want to be there. Like we used to talk about Larry Anderson not wanting to be there. John Kruk doesn't want to be there so much harder than even Larry Anderson. And he's been there a fraction of the time that Larry Anderson has been there. And like they were supposed, this is like Larry Anderson probably, I feel like Larry Anderson probably came back in the capacity that he came back because they were like, look, we signed all these players and we're going to be good again. And he was like, you know what? Yeah. That sounds nice. I will come back and do a good Phillies season. And then they were like, guess what? Yeah. And he was like, God damn it.
The loudest fart noise in history. And LA is just like, God damn it. And he's blaming it on an umpire or something. It's all he's like got the left.
The one fart I can't laugh at. God damn it. Yeah. And John Kruk is that to an insane degree. And like, it's got to be at least partially the character he's just playing.
Yeah.
Right now. He is just every broadcast. Like, even my dad is like kind of sick of it. He's just like, every broadcast is like, I'm fat. I eat too much. Like, I'm slow and I'm stupid. And the Phillies are stupid. And why'd they do that? But like, I do kind of like, I mean, I love just John Kruk as like a person.
Same.
So, you know, I he's a flawed broadcaster.
Yeah.
you get a little sick of it. But like, I love John Kruk. But like, he's definitely just playing like this grouchy character. He knows how, like, he's got some camera chops. He knows how to like pretend.
Yeah.
He was in The Fan and got stabbed to death on a baseball field. So he's got some acting chops. Part of this is the character he's playing. But I think a lot of it isn't. I think he's lost his patience with everything. And the Fanatic, like, based on the conversations I've had with the Fanatic's best friend in the past and just like the kind of antics that he gets up to, sometimes he takes on this very antagonistic kind of role where his job is like, oh, this guy, I'm really pissing this guy off. I'm gonna put him over the edge. And that's why I think we're like headed right straight for a Tommy Lasorda moment with John Kruk.
I would not be surprised. And the other moment that sticks out is when he was doing when Fanatic does his big popcorn gig every year.
Oh,
and Kruk is just sitting there, just no smile on his face, just popcorn raining down on him. It almost looks like in slow motion because he's so miserable. And I was just like, yeah, I feel this. I think the Phillies were losing big that night too. And I was pissed and like, It's like the fanatic's there to bring you out of that, and sometimes you just can't. I'm just like, God, I love the fanatic so much, but I'm too sad to deal with any of this right now.
I know exactly what you mean. The thing is, Fnatic got me with that one. He went, because that's exactly what I'm talking about. He went in there and did like three consecutive pratfalls.
Yeah,
like, oh, it was hilarious. Expertly done. Just like when he gets up from the second one, you're just in your head going like, please don't do that again, because yeah. I think Kruk is going to actually hit you. And of course he does it again, and you're like, oh fuck. We're gonna see something real bad.
No, it was great. It was one of the things where I was like, you know, many times I'm like watching a game, I'm like, oh, that would have been a good gif. And then I just, and then the sad violin music starts playing, and I look at the ground, and I start crying, and then Jack sends me a text message and just reminds me that I'm banned. And I'm like, ah, Jack, you bastard, you got me.
What do you do with all the hours that you're not on Twitter anymore? Have you like started a garden?
Nothing productive. Nothing productive. I got a girlfriend. I guess that's the only productive thing I've done in my time off Twitter. Better.
Absolutely. That's a good use of that time.
I'm going to Liz's wedding. There we go.
There you go. Yeah. See, I'll see you there.
Yes. That should be
fun. Well, you'll see me there. I'll be conducting the ceremony. So yeah.
I forgot. Oh, I can't wait.
So yeah, that's going to be, I honestly, do you think they have a press release already written explaining or apologizing for John Kruk assaulting the Fnatic on the air?
I think they should. You know, if they're a forward thinking organization like they claim to be, your analytics should show that Kruk is about to snap. Dude is about to fucking lose his mind. He really is. Like you said, I think it started as a character, but he's leaned into it at this point. He's like, I'm done watching this shit.
I mean, they're kind of like, it's mid-August. They're looking around. They're seeing like, all right, we know a lot about what we don't have. What do we have? We've got Charlie kind of in a front office role, and we can just kind of slide him into the dugout. We got the Fnatic and Kruk thing that we can play up, and people will put eyeballs on that. And then, you know, we'll just, I don't know, what do they do? Steal Bryce Harper's dog and tell him you got to hit two home runs a game until the end of the season.
They throw a GoPro on Rookie and just make him run the bases for Reese every time he pops out. Every time he pops out to the second baseman, which is checks watch every single time now.
Yeah, just load the bases up if you want a guaranteed outcome of Reese Hoskins popping out.
So painful. Every time I see the bases loaded, you should be excited, right? Real Muto kind of was like last night, was like, hey, look, this can happen. But I was like, yeah, but don't get my hopes up, buddy.
It's dread. Yeah. I feel dread when the bases are loaded. I feel it's less likely the Phillies are going to score when the bases are loaded.
Especially with no outs. With two outs, I'm like, maybe. With no outs, I'm like, nah, this is pop out, strikeout, strikeout. Or maybe all three strikeouts. It'll be fine.
Yeah, that's I don't know. Like, when did that happen to me? Like, when did I stop believing this team could score in the most likely of scoring opportunities?
This season has changed so many things. It really has. it's an endurance challenge this season.
Well, it's introducing a new generation. You know, before this season started, I was like, you know, I remember being a young Phillies fan and not having a ton of great teams to follow and help me fall in love with baseball and all that crap.
Yeah.
But we were lucky, and we got the 93 Phillies when I was like 6 years old, and that's what really got me into it. And then there wasn't really a good Phillies team again that I really was locked into until I was going to college in Philadelphia during that 07 to 2011 stretch. And, you know, that was an experience that obviously was formative for all of us. I mean, we're all going to Liz's wedding pretty much because of those Phillies,
yes.
I would say.
The 2009 team specifically, that's when we all started meeting up.
So, like, that's deeply formative. And I was like, I hope there's like a little kid getting a Bryce Harper jersey before they go to opening day, for whom like this is going to be how they meet their friends. This is how their life shapes up. And now after the season's gone the way it's gone, I'm like, well, okay, you're learning the other lesson.
Yeah.
That sometimes, most of the time,
pain.
This is the feeling you're going to have.
Pain and despair.
And not like even a sharp, entertaining pain, like a dull, boring pain.
It's like it's like a dull razor. Like you're just trying to nothing's going to cut exactly, because you get to a certain point where you're just like, I can't be hurt anymore. That's where I'm at. I can't be hurt anymore, I don't think. Like right now, I'm watching. We're down 5-1. It's bottom of the ninth, one out, man on first. There's no chance we win this game. I'm still watching it because I can't be hurt anymore.
Do your worst.
Yeah, like what can you do? Like Kingery's up, you know. I don't know if they, you know, he broke his hand or something. The Mets are beating Atlanta 10-3.
That careful and, what you wish and that's a Mets score,
and that's bad for us. Like, that's bad for us.
We said that, and the Mets score came up on the screen right when we said that.
God,
and they are pounding the life out of the Braves.
Which, like, you know, normally that in a normal fucking universe, that should be fine. That should be good. Like, that should be good that the Mets are beating the Braves, because the Mets should be in fourth, not us. Which I don't even know if we are anymore.
Oh, right. We were at least in fourth place for a time, if we're not still,
I actually have to check. Like I said, self-care. I don't check the standings. No, we're in third. Okay. We're a game up on the Mets, so it is still a good thing, technically.
This is our year, baby.
But we're going to be tied again at 9 games out, so whatever.
Well, on this podcast, we don't focus solely on the 2019 Phillies. We also travel back in time and talk about the 2009 Phillies and what they were up to at this point. So we're going to do that right after we come back from this break. Well, Chris, first of all, thank you again for being here and doing continued success while Liz prepares to get married this weekend. I can't believe I haven't called you Liz yet.
I'm waiting for it.
I mean, naturally I will just do it. But also, like, in my notes for this episode, I'll have little areas where I'm like going to ask Liz a question, and it's literally says Liz on the thing I'm looking at. So you are Liz, basically.
I mean, you really went dumpster diving today. But here, thank you. But here I am. I was like, how many people did he contact before he hit me up?
Two.
I appreciate the honesty. I remember I asked, I was like, is this the podcast where I can curse? Because otherwise, why the hell did you hit me up? I was like, I need 5 minutes to get in my Q zone where I'm just not going to curse. So just let me know. I can do it. I promise.
Man, I'm not going to have you on a podcast where you got to hold back. I know that's not your wheelhouse. And you know what? The Phillies just hit two consecutive singles.
They did.
To make it 5-2. There's runners on first and third now. And I got to tell you what. If the Phillies make this any more interesting, I feel like the last third of this podcast is going to be us just live.
It's going to be a live chat. Isn't this the dude that Harper hit? No, it's not. There's a dude with the glasses that Harper hit the bomb off of. Who's up now?
Joe Madden is the guy with the glasses.
Joe Madden. I can't stand him.
Me neither.
I really can't. Even 08 regardless. Like, he's not a good manager. Just everybody shut up. All right, we're getting off track again. Let's not get ahead of ourselves, because
he's such a wiener.
I was going to call him a penis, and I was like, I don't know if that's appropriate, but he's just a penis with glasses. It's really annoying. He's just there.
You know, Bruce Bochy went to his bullpen in like the first inning out in San Francisco, and I made so many jokes about how Gabe Kapler like tripped over his own feet when he saw that happen and was like, oh my God, it's a matchup game. We're going to get me on the phone. We got to talk about which position player is going to pitch the 12th inning.
Him and Klentak furiously texting each other. What do I do?
We got to acquire some quad A guys right now. Get him on a bus.
Call Franco up. He's good.
He's
again.
Gonna pitch.
Yeah. He's gonna pitch. God damn it. That's realistic. And
but when he's facing Joe Madden, I'm just like, these are the two most insufferable people to be managing against each other.
It's really rough. I started out as a Kapler guy. Like, I was defending him. Like, I was like, give him a shot. Even last year, I was like, I felt like he got the most out of the team. But then I'm kind of realizing that I guess it was Rick Kranitz, who has now gone to the Braves and is getting the most out of the Braves starting pitching. That's fine.
Love that.
It's
love
great.
That.
What are,
love how that went down.
They're like, oh, Chris Young and his analytics are going to leave. No, we can't have this. Rick, get the fuck out of here.
Sure, you can take Kranitz.
Yeah.
Pinch of shit.
God. Yeah. What a horrible turn of events. Anyway, we were getting back to 2009, I think.
We were, but now you introduced the Kapler thing, and I want to sit on this for a second, just because, yeah, I feel like I had a healthy mindset. They brought in Kapler. I mean, I didn't really know much about him. Obviously, the analytics thing came up really quick, and that became like his defining component, and he's supposed to be like a skilled communicator who knows how to talk to players, like a player's manager, but in a different way than probably Charlie would have been it's considered a player's manager.
Yeah.
And for a long time, I don't know, I feel like I was pretty reasonable. I was never so pro Kapler that I would jump into your mentions and be like, fuck you.
Yeah.
I was never so anti Kapler that I was like, this guy, he's never going to win me over, Charlie till I die.
Mm-hmm.
But like, you know, stuff has happened clearly since Gabe Kapler first got here. And, you know, obviously the story that surfaced when he was out in LA really changed how I view him.
Same.
And his judgment. And then just like all the on field stuff. First of all, it seems like it matters less, but you know, this is a baseball podcast and we'll talk about the baseball aspect. So like the decisions he made there was just like, yeah, I don't really get that. Yeah, I didn't really get that either. And then he always has an explanation for something, which is like, okay, fine. I mean, if you're doing it for like a reason, I guess I get it, but it was the game. And this was, I think, a turning point for a lot of people. It was the game. I think it was the 15 inning game
yes.
where they pinch ran, Zach Eflin with Vince Velasquez, then put Vince Velasquez in the outfield. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Shades of Roy Oswalt moment. Absolutely. Vince Velasquez.
And he made the most of it for fuck.
Vince Velasquez.
That was
what a fucking baller.
I could not believe, like, I was like, Vince Velasquez, like when we acquired him, I was on the Vince train, and then he had that 16K complete game against the Padres, and I was like, hell yeah, I'm validated. And then, you know, since then, it's not been so great, but it's just,
he's always seemed like he was one adjustment away.
Yes,
from getting it.
I always just thought that he was going to put it together, but yeah, that game was amazing. And then like me thinking, like when he puts Roman Quinn in a tie game, and I guess it was like the 14th inning at this point, 13th, 14th. And I'm like, you got Adam Haseley. I understand not wanting to put him as an injury risk, but the dude pitched in college. Can't we, like, in a tie game, at least try that? I don't know if I'm wrong in that sense. Like, there might be like a, no, you can't have a guy who hasn't pitched in that long who's trying to go out and pitch versus Roman Quinn, who's just lobbing it.
Well, the thing that, I mean, you could have complained about a lot of different things in that game. And my question was, everything you complained about, somebody would jump in and be like, yeah, well, what's he supposed to do? Blah, 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 blah. Or he did this because of this.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, but I guess I'm just saying I don't agree with that, because, you know, Zach Eflin's like, oh, I got like this little soreness. And he was like, oh, I'm taking you out of this game.
Phillies are really going to do this, aren't they?
Sorry. Says later. No, I know. It's, now it's 5-3. Yeah. Runners on first and second with one out. Yeah.
Continue.
So he pulls Eflin from the game after he's like, I'm a little sore. After the game, Eflin's like, it was by no means an injury. You know, I wasn't in danger in my mind. And so that made everybody was like, oh, so he just took him out and it wasn't even like seriously injured. But people were like, look at this pitching staff. They've been riddled with injuries all year long. He's going to pull this reliever now, Zach Eflin, just to preserve his bullpen. He's worried about pitcher health. I'm like, I get that. But then he put a starting pitcher in the outfield. And so people were like, oh, well, he was just, is it really that harmful for him to stand out there in left field? I'm like, no, it's not. Did you see the game?
Yeah.
He did a lot more than just stand there.
Yeah.
Like, he could have hurt him. And that's a starting pitcher versus a relief pitcher that he pulled from the game to put the starting pitcher in left field. So I just, at that point, I was like, look, I don't want to bother getting all worked up about this. Clearly, I succeeded. And and I just kind of saw that game and was just like, you know what? I don't know why, but this is it. Like, I'm kind of off. I'm never going to call for somebody to be like, they need to fire this guy. But like, I'm kind of like off. I'm like, yeah, if the Phillies decide to move on or go in another direction, like, I would understand it. It's just like, how can they now? Because the whole organization has developmentally shifted to be better suited for a guy like Kapler to run it. So I don't know.
I'm like wondering if Dusty Wathan has been, you know, chilling long enough to meld his, because he was always analytic driven to an extent. He was like the median between Charlie Manuel and Gabe Kapler. He was right in the middle. And now I wonder if he's learned enough where they're comfortable with, like, because if this team makes the playoffs, Gabe is obviously safe. It's a lose-lose, I think, has been written a lot about Kapler. It's a lose-lose. If they don't make the playoffs, Kapler's fucked. If they do, they're going to just credit Charlie Manuel, which is unfair to him, to be honest. But like, I wonder if Dusty Wathan, like, he was the guy I wanted as the manager, not Gabe Kapler. When I heard about Gabe Kapler, I was like, no, why? It was the same reaction I had when we were going to draft Mickey Moniak. I was like, no, why? like the same reason. I was like, what are you doing? You have all these options and you're choosing that? I don't understand, but okay, I'll choose to trust you guys. But I don't know. I was willing to, you know, like you said, just, I wasn't going to defend him. I did when somebody hit me up. Like, if I was like yelling at people for Gabe always being positive last year, I was like, he's doing the best with what he has. This year, I'm like, fuck his fucking optimism. Like, I'm miserable. I need you to be miserable and angry. Like, him getting thrown out, that was strategic in my mind. He's like, I got to start getting thrown out. Otherwise, these fans are going to completely turn on me.
I think I said the same thing at the time. Like, it looked like he watched a bunch of video footage of other managers getting thrown out of games and just sort of mimicked it. And like, I don't want to just like harp on the guy. Like, I don't feel like being that. It's exhausting to like stalk somebody and criticize their every move. But it just like entered my head. Like, that just looks like somebody doing an impression of somebody getting kicked out of a baseball game.
Really? And his double takes, just constant double takes. Cause he's, every time he does a double take to the dugout and then back to the umpire, I know he's just thinking of the next thing to say. And he's just trying to like, what should I say to get tossed? What will do it? Cause cursing's not working. He comes out cursing. Reese Hoskins got hit on the hand.
Yep.
Bases are loaded, but at what cost?
Yeah, now I'm more convinced than ever.
Now Harper's up with one out and the bases loaded. We're down by two. This is so rich. I'm actually contracting diabetes as we speak. Because
it's a hell of a debut for you.
This is ripe for a double play. All right, he got hit in the palm. That's not bad.
He's okay.
That'll be fine.
I kind of want to look up. We know Bryce Harper. Last I heard, this has obviously changed because this was like a couple of days ago. Last I heard, I think it was on the YouTube game. They announced Bryce Harper is a 174 hitter with no runners on base, which is like the lowest in baseball. But with runners in scoring position, he's hitting 378, according to Corey Seidman at NBC Sports.
Dude lives for the moment.
So, you know, this is probably who you want up in this situation.
Yeah.
Which sounds crazy to have to say about Bryce Harper, but that's kind of the point I was going to move into here, is that Charlie Manuel, they said, was a player's manager. And around the time that I think he was being fired, I wrote something for Philly.com where I like just looked at a bunch of like what people want from a manager, what that job really entails. And in Charlie's case, I kind of concluded that what he did was just create this comfortable environment where talented young players, like the Phillies gave him a bunch of talented young players. Mm-hmm. The development system was churning out all kinds of homegrown talent at that point. And they just gave him these players. And he was like, all right, I'm just going to give you this comfortable environment where like my hitting expertise is available to you. And just, I want you to feel like, I don't want you to come in here every day with your parking brake on mentally. Like, I want you to just like feel like this is where you can be, and this is where you can live, and this is where you can play, and you can just reach your ceiling.
Yeah.
And to me, that's what a player manager was. And Gabe Kapler, also a player manager, feels kind of different.
It was
feels
like robotic and forced.
Yeah. Feels like he wants to maybe not like be in control of everything, but you know, when he got here and it was talking about like, this is what the players, this is like, we want them to eat this stuff. We want them to look at these numbers. We want them to do this and do that.
Chip Kelly, like Chip Kelly of baseball. Yeah. Is how
reminds
it felt.
Me very much of Chip Kelly. Yeah, I mean, I don't think he's in there like holding a gun to anybody's head.
No,
but like we don't hear a peep from that clubhouse. It is chained and soundproofed shut. Like we only hear what they want us to hear. And Gabe Kapler sounds more like he's running like an office staff than a baseball team. The way he like sends out memos or reads memos to reporters.
It's just weird to me. Like I don't know. I get like a. I don't know, it's like nobody will like nobody throws anybody under the bus, which is good.
Oh, there's definitely some positive,
but
absolutely.
Yeah. But at the same time, it's just, some of it just feels so disingenuous. Like, I don't know. Like there's certain points where I feel like you said, like Charlie just kind of took the talent and was like, okay, everybody here's good. Everybody relax. Everybody go have fun. And this, it's like, everybody's here. Everybody here is good. And you better be that good. Otherwise everything's going to suck. And now everything's sucking, and everybody's just like, fuck. Like, just internal panic is what I feel like is going on in every player's brain at this point. Everybody's pressing. Everybody's, you know, like, they're waiting. Like the game the other night, I forget who it was against, when Harper and Hoskins struck out 6 of 9 at-bats or whatever, I was just like, swing the fucking bat. And I'm wondering if that's what Charlie came in and said, because, you know, they came out last night when they scored the 11 runs swinging early. So just, yeah, swing the bat. It's just, patience is good. On base percentage is great. But at the same time, you know, attack your pitch.
I mean, I feel like we did see that. You're right. Last year we saw pressing. That was the word I couldn't think of. A lot of young players trying to do it all.
Yeah.
Like that's just, we saw that. And that's, you know, that sucks. But like this year, and that was going to be my point, that like last year, Gabe Kapler like had to manage a clubhouse full of young players. And this year, it's like the Charlie Manuel approach of just stand back and let good players be good. And look at this team.
Yeah.
This team is full of good players. I keep saying that, and I just don't know where else to go with it.
Even with all the injuries, they're going to lean on the injuries. I know that. And it's semi-fair. The bullpen is ravaged. I mean, we've got like what? We just picked up a fucking Pirates castaway. the guy who Mark M. Leaf on Twitter, who said everybody he's absolutely seen UP, and it's dead it's dead accurate. He's just got these bulging beady eyes. It's really disturbing.
But this is the kind of team that should be scoring 7-8 runs a night.
It,
you know,
it really is.
They should be. And yeah, depth was an issue and continues to be an issue. But like when you're 3-4-5 is Hoskins, Harper, Real Muto,
you should be doing damage.
At least a little more damage. You should not be one or two runs a game as often as this team has.
They all slump at the same time, but then yeah. One of them gets hot, but never all three at the same time.
Absolutely not. Even Kingery. Kingery looked, we were saying he should be the Phillies all-star early in the season. And he's obviously fallen off a bit, but he looked great for the first half of the season. And you just couldn't use that to your advantage because nobody else was hitting.
Yep. And then he even got like that injury, like a month-long injury during his hot streak, and then came back and stayed hot for a little bit, tapered off, got hot again. Now he's tapering off again. So we probably have that type of player going on. Hopefully not Franco level where you end up in AAA, but oh God, like the McCutcheon injury. That's what I always look back to. The night that happened, I was just like, we're fucked. Like that was my initial, like, and then I was like, no, Chris, chill out, you know, chill out.
and we were.
Yeah. And it turns out I was right. And I was like, we're fucked. And I was like, oh no, McCutcheon's walking around the clubhouse. He says he's felt this pain before. It's never been that serious. Next day, out for the year. I'm like, fuck. I remember just sitting on my floor. And the worst part is I ordered a McCutcheon throwback jersey.
Oh, so you did this?
Yes, okay. It's my fault. It arrived 2 days after his injury, and I just sat there on my floor staring at it, like just so upset. Like
we threw in a bonus severed Andrew McCutcheon tendon.
Here's a UCL. I'm like, dude, take both of mine. Do you even have two of those? I'm pretty sure you do. I know the anatomy. It's fine.
Well, Chris, we're looking at a 2-2 count on Bryce Harper with the bases loaded, one out, but. Oh my God.
If he walks it out, you'll get quite the reaction. What? Are you ahead of me?
Oh my God.
No, what? What?
Oh my
what?
God.
What?
He did it.
No, he
oh
didn't.
God, he did.
No, he didn't.
Oh
no,
God,
he didn't.
He did
holy
he
shit.
The hand slip.
What the fuck? Are you kidding me? All right. All right. I changed my mind. Charlie Manuel is fucking magic. Oh my God. He's running the bases as fast as he can. Are you. Holy shit. Holy fucking shit. All right, I'm in.
Yep, okay, so we're all Phillies fans again. Everything about this season has been great. You know, it's just been a rallying point to this point in time, you know? we believed in ourselves the whole way. We believed in the team the whole
never
way.
Doubted no doubts, never doubted him. Never doubted him for a fucking second.
The management, 100% in his corner the entire time. Gabe Kapler's a genius. Everybody on this team's contributed in some way or another. And, I mean, where did that fucking land? Did that land in that
That's
prison
the, I
across
think,
the river
I think that was
Camden?
The second deck again. Just the most violent swing. Oh, my God, dude. Look at the. Oh, they're showing the Cubs players with their hands on their heads. I'm just soaking this in. I'm just eating it up. Oh my God! Don't show Sean Rodriguez. I don't want to see that right now.
That's a bummer. And for a player who's so overrated like Harper to beat you like that, that's gotta sting.
Yeah. why don't you chant overrated at him again so he can point at you?
Boy, I think he stood at home.
I can't believe it, dude. I thought you were fucking with me
for a full minute.
I know you're. I know I'm on a delay, but I thought you were fucking with me.
I thought you were gonna react before I did. I thought the way that camera's moving, there's no way that's fell. Man, he really knocked the shit out of that.
What that bounced off the third deck.
I think that might be the longest home run he's ever hit here.
It has to be. Look at him. He's like, I just did that. Look, he fucking loses it. He loses it before he takes two steps.
Wow. Well, see, that's what you get for putting a cartoon snowman on the mound.
Oh my God, dude!
I think he ran right.
He did an Utley grand slam. Utley's first homer, the grand slam where he ran the fucking bases. That's what he did. They're losing it. This is, you know what? Baseball is fun again for another night. Holy shit!
Well, I guess we could talk about the 2009 Phillies if you want to.
I mean, I can.
We'll take a quick commercial break and then we'll come back, talk for 30 seconds about the Phillies, and then go back to Bryce Harper right after this. And we're back. I've caught my breath, but I'm still sweating. after Bryce Harper walks off the Phillies with a grand slam, basically has his knees hitting him in the chest all around the bases as the Cubs fall to their knees and just sort of do a stomach crawl off the field in utter shame and embarrassment. We on this podcast, we typically go back and talk about the 2009 Phillies. And this year, a lot of the times that we've done that, that's been a source of joy in a time of frustration. But right now, I mean, God, if you guys want a history lesson, we sure can we can go back and mention a few things. So I'll just jump right in here real quick. So around this time 10 years ago, Andy Martino of the Inquirer, he was mentioning that the Phillies' goal in their series with the Braves was to, quote, dishearten one of their two division rivals for a playoff spot, the other one being the Marlins. They'd been swept by the Marlins and then swept the Cubs. So but the time of, like, careful balance was over. They needed to just put some distance between themselves and their opposition. So I say all this because Ryan Howard helped them do that in game one of this series with the Braves with one swing of the bat, pretty much in the same fashion that Bryce Harper just – well, in exactly the same fashion that Bryce Harper just did for the 2019 Phillies. Joe Blanton and Jair Jurgens went at it for a bunch of innings. I pretty much just mentioned them because it grounds us in – like, you hear those two names and you're like, oh, yeah, I know what year we're in now.
Yeah.
Chipper Jones hit an RBI single in the first. Chase Utley gave the Phillies a 2-1 lead with a two-run shot. A little later, Ryan Church hit a double.
Ryan Church. Yeah. The guy who just roamed around the National League East for his entire career.
Yes. Mm-hmm. One of those. Okay. Yeah, one of those guys. One of those
like
nomads.
The Brian Schneider.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But this was like a really fast paced, electric, kind of fun late season game that like we don't see a lot of around here anymore. And Howard knew, kind of felt that. And he came up to the plate and he was their big engine for big moments in the second half of a lot of seasons, especially the 2009 season. And on the 2-1 pitch, he led off the inning in the bottom of the ninth. On the 2-1 pitch, he tattooed this Rafael Soriano pitch into deep, deep center field and won the Phillies this game. So he did that a lot.
Guess who didn't get to untuck his jersey that night? God, that, you know, I was the old curmudgeon back then. Now stop untucking your jersey, leave it tucked in. You know, like back in 09, I was like basically 50 years old.
We're going to church.
In baseball years, yeah. It's really bad.
Thinking, got etiquette, jersey etiquette for grown men cosplaying athletes.
Exactly. I'm not having that. Sorry. You're not on my team. I'm not allowing it.
Well, twice in this game, Shane Victorino made catches on deep fly balls that looked like they'd be extra bases and would have been deciding factors in the game. Twice making the catch and crashing into the wall. I mean, that was just vintage Shane. Everybody loves Shane. I remember, like, a couple years later, he tried to do that and missed the ball. And I remember thinking in a moment in my head, just like, I think it's over. Like, I think the Phillies are over.
Was that the game where he caught the ball against the wall and
twice? Yeah.
And they had the shot of him where he's covering one letter and it just says this next to him on the outfield wall.
Oh,
do you remember that?
I think that is.
That might be that. I don't.
That's
Jesus
right.
Christ,
oh my
man.
God,
talking about 09, just everything comes flooding back. It's really, it's
I
really
totally
crazy.
Forgot about that. That was an amazing shot.
Yes.
Oh my God. Yeah. So that was that game. And I wrote down that Jason Wirth after the game gave some quotes that were just like, he must have been in a good mood because he's such a cranky person.
Oh yeah.
But he must have been in a good mood because he talked like he was reading off an index card written by a publicist. And he was just like, yeah, I think we're a really good team. We're going to go out and get it. And like, we believe in each other. And I was like, that doesn't sound like Jason Wirth because he's not screaming at a little boy's father right in front of him.
Listen, Wirth, high point for us. I need you to read this.
I need you to do me a favor and don't scream at this reporter.
Yeah, it'll be fine.
But yeah, so, you know, a couple of days ago, we all got a little sick because the Phillies sent Adam Haseley back down to AAA. And part of that was, he was, really the only like good looking center fielder on the roster. And when you have such a glut of outfielders as this team has had, it becomes commonplace to think like anybody with some speed and a glove can handle center field. But Chris, when you've been watching Adam Haseley make some plays in center field, I feel like we've been more and more watching him track down more and more balls that, other guys who've played that position this year wouldn't have gotten. So obviously, Odubel Herrera's cast out, and hopefully we never see him in a Phillies uniform.
They better cut him in the offseason.
But, you know, this season, his situation led to an absence of a center fielder on this team. Do you think that's Adam Haseley's job moving forward?
Right now, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, like, him and Quinn are fighting it out right now. Like, they put Haseley in left field, and he looked pretty good. Like, that catch in San Francisco, which I thought he had no shot at, and he just kind of made it look routine. No dive, nothing. I was like, what the hell was that? I mean, Quinn, you know, Quinn's kind of showing some signs of coming to life a little bit, I guess. It's like, it's weird because you see McCutchen, like, I'm following his Instagram and seeing how fast he's recovering, and he keeps swearing he'll be ready for opening day. So that's that's a whole different dynamic, because then if he's not ready for opening day, you have Haisley and Quinn, I would assume. Well, I guess I don't even know anymore. Dickerson's a free agent. I doubt we bring him back. Logan Morrison, he'll be gone. Jay
you,
Bruce.
You mentioned Logan Morrison's name.
Sorry. I didn't mean to. But it's like, then you have Jay Bruce. We have him no matter what, or we have to do like a buyout or whatever, I think. You would think it would be Haisley and Quinn switching between left and center, depending on what McCutchen does. But I'd rather Haisley than Quinn at this point. Quinn's a fourth outfielder to me.
Yeah, I mean, as encouraging as it is to see Quinn kind of like step it up a little bit, I don't know. These guys, like, I mean, it's the same thing with Velasquez. Like, yeah, he's got this amazing fastball, but if that's all he has, and if nothing's going to change, then unfortunately you got to cut ties. And unfortunately, that usually means watching him make it work somewhere else. Mm-hmm. But like, same with Quinn. It's like, he's got this amazing speed, but the guy can't stay on the field.
He can't.
And like, how do you prioritize him for a roster spot, a guy who's not going to be there most of the season? So, yeah, I bring this up just because I really liked what I saw in Adam Haisley, and it was so cool to see somebody who can play that position. Yeah. Cause I realized I had just gotten used to not seeing that. And he is a center fielder. And it really reminds you how different those positions are out there.
Yeah. And it's like, he was really putting it together, like on the fly. Like, he's obviously been rushed through the system at this point. I mean, I guess not too much since he was a college player, but, you know, he spent what, like a week in AAA tops. And, it's like all that minor league options game. And it's like, it's so stupid. I wish there was another way they could do it. I get why it's in place, but it really dicks over people like him and Eflin last year, who had to go down just to come back up and pitch, and cost him like $35,000. And we're all like, oh, whatever, he's going to make millions. But at the same time, it cost him $35,000. I don't know. I wouldn't be too happy about it. I think Haisley definitely has a shot at taking that over, because I don't know who else is going to do it, to be honest.
Well, I have some other things to talk about, but we're going to run out of time here. I think what I'm going to do is I'm just going to read you around this time in 2009, they were doing a new rundown of the Phillies top 10 prospects, because the Cliff Lee deal and the fact that Jay Happ had been brought up and made a member of the big league rotation. So there had been a lot of shifting. So I want to read you that just for shits and giggles.
Okay.
And then we can get back to what we really want to talk about, which is the end of this game we just watched. So the Phillies top 10 prospects in 2009, as of August 15th, 2009, Dominic Brown.
God damn. I knew that was coming.
Next to his description in the Inquirer, the phrase all-star is consistently attached to his name.
Once. Number two. He was once. They weren't wrong.
Hey, that's actually, yeah, you're right. Yeah. So Kyle Drabek is number two. Liz and I kind of, we were criticized for laughing off Kyle Drabek's career, when talking about the Roy Halladay trade not too long ago. We were not laughing at Kyle Drabek because his injuries really impacted his career.
Yeah.
And that sucked. We were laughing at the idea that he had been, Charlie Manuel had actually compared him to, crap, I forget. I think Nolan Ryan, maybe. But like, we were laughing at the Hall of Fame comparisons for prospects.
And love those comps.
Like that Charlie made it. Just that those comps exist in the first place. Always, it's just funny because they don't have to. And it just, you know, it puts so
what much... was the Mickey Moniak comp like right away? Tony Gonzalez or some shit, something crazy. Yeah.
Mickey Mantle, because they have the same name. Wow,
it's a white guy who swings the bat and you know, he hits the ball good.
It's... The most famous one to me is Dom Brown and Daryl Strawberry.
Yeah.
So, that's timely now because, you know, we just said his name. So then we have Michael Taylor, Anthony Gose, Travis d'Arnaud, Freddie Galvis at number six, Trevor May at number seven, Vance Worley, number eight, Joe Savory, and Heitor Correa.
What?
Number 10. Yeah, I don't know who that is.
I don't think I've ever even heard that name.
A 20-year-old Brazilian who has four pitches and some savvy. He was sought in trades. That's the description I'm looking at.
He savvied his way to some money and then peace the fuck out.
Well, Chris, Phillies just won with a grand slam walk-off from Bryce Harper.
Unbelievable.
What do they do the rest of the season?
Fuck.
Is this a playoff team?
You can't
just say yes.
You're recording me. This is not fair. I've been dunked on in the past for getting too overzealous, and that's how I'm feeling right now. Fuck, I don't know, dude. Right now, baseball's fun, and You know what? Fuck it. They're going to make the fucking playoffs.
Sure.
Will it be will it be disappointing when they do? Probably. It won't end well. Will it give those, you know, higher ups some talking points? Yeah, and it's going to suck. But it might embolden them to actually, you know, really spend on some pitching. I've always said Colin Cole 2020, Garrett Cole, Cole Hamels. I want both of them. That would be nice, but who the hell knows? I mean, Garrett Cole's probably going to get $250 million and he might just flame out like pitchers do. And then I'll be like, oh, I'm dumb. And I got caught up in the free agent thing again. But I don't know. Harper's paying off right now.
Well, listen, you don't have to worry about being right. You don't have to worry about being dunked on. Because as the line gets blurred between fan and analyst, as you know, as the years go by, that line's gotten blurrier and blurrier. But as fans, you know, it's not our job, I think people forget. It's not our job to know the future.
Yeah.
We can have all the opinions you want. That's fine, obviously. It's not our job to know the future. It's our job to have fun now. And the Phillies, one reason I've been so mad at them this season is because they've failed to do even that. They failed to make it fun when it was at least supposed to be a little more fun than it's been the past better part of a decade. But nights like this are fun.
Yeah.
That's why we're fans in the first place. So this, if as long as we get more of this and this leads to a playoff spot, I'm happy. But even if it's just more of this, you know, I'm not going to be as satisfied as I wanted to be this season, but at least the ending is better than last year. So
agreed.
That's where I'm going to leave it, and that's where we're going to leave it on this episode of Continued Success. So everybody drink in the win from Thursday night, and we'll talk to you next week on Continued Success. Thank you so much to Chris for joining and filling in for Liz. I guess I'll be seeing you this weekend.
Yes, you will. And everybody on Twitter, I'm fine. It's okay.
Now get back in your cage.
Get back. I gotta go. Jack is already texting me, so I'm already in trouble. I gotta get out of here.
All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you next week on Continued Success.